And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm John Chanza in Washington on this live broadcast from Studio 14. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Monday, March 20, 2023. South Sudan's military spokesperson says the army is ill-equipped to enforce the rule of law in the country.
Civilians in the Republic of South Sudan are armed to the teeth in some situations more than the regular forces, including the SPDF. But of course, as time goes by, and when sanctions are lifted, we'll be able to rearm our national army with modern equipment, with modern weapons.
And cattle herders from Central African Republic and Chad attack civilians in Western Equatorial State.
The presence of Wambororo in Iba is creating serious insecurity with the people. And even it is very difficult now for the local people to go to the forest to do what they can do because Wambororo are there and they are creating insecurity. Seeing a reason why people from different countries come and cause trouble to serious people in Iba.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The South Sudan Army says it has no capacity to provide security and enforce the rule of law in the country because its forces are not well equipped. The South Sudan military spokesman says some civilians in the country are well armed and sometimes overwhelm security forces. For VOA News, Manyang David Mayer reports from Juba.
In its annual human rights report released on Friday, UNMIS said South Sudan has seen an increase in the number of civilians affected by violence this past year compared to 2021. UNMIS spokesperson Linda Tom says over 3,000 civilians were affected in 2022, but the overall number of violent incidents was down.
The number of South Sudanese civilians harmed by violence increased slightly in 2022. That's last year, compared with the previous year, 2021, though the overall number of violence incidents decreased, according to the latest report from the UN mission in South Sudan. At least 3,469 civilian victims were affected, mostly by killing, injury, abduction, and conflict-related sexual violence.
The report says violence escalated in the three areas of Southern Unity State, Warabi State, and the Greater Upper Nile region. Military spokesperson Major General Lurai Kong says the army has deployed forces to the country's most hostile areas to prevent an uptick in violence against civilians.
The government has put in place a number of measures, one including the deployment of regular security forces, and that one we did it in Warabi State. We deployed the unified forces to create a buffer zone between the rival clans of Ngok Dinka and Twit Mayar. Secondly, when there were clashes between the two rival factions of Kitgwang and armed civilians from Jomolei, we deployed forces in Panyikang County of Upper Nile State, and we are still working on doing the same in parts of Greater Equatoria, where we have been getting reports of farmers clashing with cattle herders.
Despite efforts being exerted to stop further escalation of violence across South Sudan, Kong admits the military power of the South Sudan People's Defense Forces at times falls short when it comes face-to-face interaction with armed civilians in parts of the country.
Civilians in the Republic of South Sudan are armed to the teeth in some situations more than the regular forces, including the SPDF. There's nobody in denial of that. But of course, as time goes by, and when sanctions are lifted, we'll be able to rearm our national army with modern equipment, with modern weapons.
Gerald Kong says, for now, the army is just about carrying the same type of weapons as the civilians and are at times, in his words, overwhelmed. In June 2022, armed civilians killed 18 officers, including two colonels, with the South Sudan People's Defense Forces while responding to a cattle raid in Toyin North County of Warabi State. Philip Aguer, a lecturer of security and strategic studies at the University of Juba, says the violence will only come to an end when security forces become professional enough to draw a line between loyalty to their tribes and to the nation.
You start with individual private soldier, whether it's a police or an army. They should be trained sufficiently so that they know their role, they protect the law that they know, and I think this is what we need in South Sudan.
Aguer says South Sudan forces need to focus on professionalism and need to be strengthened if they are ever going to curb violence across the country. The 2018 peace agreement calls for security sector reforms, including the unification of forces and disarmament of civilians, in order for the government to restore peace and stability in the country. For VOA News, Amanyang David Mayor in Juba.
Still on security matters, authorities in Western Equatoria State say two people were killed by members of a nomadic community known as Ambororo, who migrate to the area annually from Chad and Central African Republic. A local church leader says the presence of the nomadic group causes insecurity in the area. Viola Elias reports for VOA from Juba.
Bishop Wilson Kamani of the Iba Diocese of the Episcopal Church of South Sudan says the nomad killed a youth leader and a chief and also burned down several houses in Iba County. Kamani says the Ambororo or the Selika Islamists arrived in Western Equatoria State's Iba County months ago.
The presence of Ambororo in Iba is creating serious insecurity with the people because some of our people, especially the youth leader in Bamani, was killed by Ambororo, and even one of the chiefs is killed by Ambororo, and even it is very difficult now for the local people to go to the forest to do what they can do because the Ambororo are there and they are creating insecurity.
Bishop Kamani says he cannot understand why a community that migrated to the county wants to cause chaos. He is urging security forces to evacuate the Ambororo people.
See no reason why people from different countries come and cause trouble here to people in Iba. And if there are people who can send them away, we the people on the ground do not want to see Ambororo here.
Iba County Commissioner Elisama Charles confirms to South Sudan in Focus that the presence of the Ambororo has become a big threat to the county. Charles says county authorities have asked the police to urgently deploy forces to the area where the Ambororo are settled.
We have taken the setting that we called our organized forces to deploy them to the places where they are common, to tell them that let them go peacefully. We don't want any problem with them. So that is what we are doing now.
A resident whom we are calling Taban to protect his privacy due to the sensitivity of the story says he believes the Ambororos moves freely in the area because they are backed by some unidentified high-profile individuals in the national government. He says in the past, the state minister of local government and law enforcement issued an order to evacuate Ambororo nomads from Iba, but the order was never enforced. Taban says Iba County residents suffer due to the presence of the Ambororo, but authorities stay silent.
People are suffering and there is no need to make others suffer for one person. It is time for cultivation and people want to go for cultivation, but it is hard for traders to make business there for them to get salt and soaps.
Taban claims that in less than a month, the Ambororo people have killed nearly 30 people in the state. That figure could not be verified by authorities. For VOA News, I am Viola Elias in Juba.
From Juba, we move to Jonglei State, where the UN World Food Programme says it has suspended its aid convoy movements outside the Jonglei State capital, Bor, following an armed attack on a humanitarian convoy last week. The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs in South Sudan called the attack a targeted one. Wake Simon Wudu has more for VOA from the capital, Juba.
WFP country representative Mary Ellen Magrotti says the humanitarian community is appalled by continued attacks targeting humanitarians and their assets in South Sudan, which disrupts the delivery of life-saving assistance.
Following the latest attack, the World Food Programme has been forced to temporarily pause its convoy movements out of Bor, Jonglei State, for the second time in as many weeks to reassess mitigation measures.
Magroti says the Jonglei corridor, where the movements of the 8th convoy have been suspended, is critical for WFP foot pre-positioning ahead of the rainy season when roads are inaccessible and more than a million people in Jonglei and Pibor rely on humanitarian foot assistance. Magroti says the Jonglei corridor, where the movements of the 8th convoy have been suspended, is critical for WFP foot pre-positioning ahead of the rainy season when roads are inaccessible and more than a million people in Jonglei and Pibor rely on the humanitarian foot assistance.
The safety and security of staff and contractors is paramount. And when incidents like this occur, it is the women, the children and the men in desperate need of assistance who suffer the most.
In a statement released today, UN OCHA said a humanitarian convoy of more than 100 trucks transporting food and other humanitarian assistance came under attack on Friday. Two contracted drivers were shot dead in the attack, one fatally. Another person died in a road traffic accident as a direct result of the incident. A humanitarian staff was also injured and is currently receiving treatment. Joseph Nganji, head of UN OCHA in South Sudan, says the attack is the latest in a series of escalating incidents targeting humanitarian convoys and workers across South Sudan.
The humanitarian community in South Sudan strongly condemns the targeted attack on humanitarian assets and staff in Jonglei State, in which two people were killed and others seriously injured.
UN OCHA says that while humanitarians continue to provide much-needed support across parts of the country, the continuation of violent attacks hampers their efforts. The humanitarian body is calling on South Sudanese authorities to take urgent action to improve security, protect civilians, and humanitarian personnel. It also says the perpetrators should be brought to justice. Iganji says the latest attack underscores the dangerous environment in which aid workers operate in South Sudan.
South Sudan is one of the most dangerous places for aid workers, with 9 humanitarian workers killed in the line of duty and 418 incidences reported in 2022. Before this incident, since the beginning of the year, 3 aid workers were killed while on duty providing critical services to the most vulnerable affected by the protracted humanitarian situation.
The United States Embassy in Juba also condemned the incident in a statement issued Monday. It calls on the leaders of the transitional government of South Sudan and its security forces to prevent attacks on humanitarian aid workers and staff. Efforts to reach the South Sudan Relief and Rehabilitation Commission Chair, Manasseh Lomole, were unsuccessful, as Manasseh says his office is not yet in a position to comment on the story. Iganji says there were more than 20 violent incidents against humanitarian staff and assets in January alone this year. That is more than double what it was in January 2022. So far this year, an estimated 9.4 million people in South Sudan are projected to need humanitarian assistance or protection services, said UN OCHA. UN OCHA says the humanitarian situation is worsened by endemic violence, access constraints, operational interference, public health challenges, and climate shocks such as flooding and a localized drought. For VOA News, I'm Waki Simon Wudu in Juba.
You are tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Coming up, some South Sudanese women in Washington, D.C. embark on girls' education. Find out why after this break.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is your favorite meal?
I like chips and anything braai, whether chicken or beef.
My favorite meal is our fish, mainly chambo, and local vegetables like nkwani.
I love chapati. Like, I don't know why I love chapati, but I just love chapati. There's no reason for loving it. Like, chapati every day.
My favorite meal is jollof and rice with chicken. That will be best for me.
My favorite food, matoke, that is banana and beans. Banana and beans, yes.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You are listening to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Dozens of South Sudanese women in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia area gathered over the weekend to celebrate International Women's Day with emphasis on the importance of girls' education back home and here in the diaspora. Nabil Biagio attended the event and files this report.
Today, we're celebrating International Women's Day, a day that is dedicated to honor women's achievement around the world and to recognize the ongoing struggle for gender equality. And also it is a day to celebrate the progress that being made, but also to reflect on the work that still needs to be done to ensure that women are treated fairly and with respect.
That's Lena Ajak, president of the South Sudanese community in D.C., Maryland, and Virginia, kicking off an event celebrating International Women's Day over the weekend at Cornerstone Evangelical Free Church in Virginia. The community organized the weekend event. Jane Kiden Jackson is director for Women, Peace, and Security at South Sudan's Ministry of Gender, Child, and Social Welfare, who is on an official visit to the U.S. She says girls' education is an appropriate theme for celebrating International Women's Day among the South Sudanese community, given the many challenges facing girls who are trying to get an education in South Sudan.
When we look at the education system in South Sudan, and especially the girls' education, we had a number of challenges that affects girls in education. One, we can look at the early child marriage. It affects the number of children. They dropped out. Two, the issues of cultures and traditions, where child marriage is part of other cultures also. It also affects the children, but also the poverty that we have in South Sudan also affects children.
Jackson says South Sudanese diaspora women coming together to support girls' education back home is in line with the United Nations theme for celebrating International Women's Day this year, which focuses on accelerating gender equality through digitalization.
If we are looking at the theme of this year, digitalization, they can reach people down there through the media devices, through social media. They can use it. But also we are saying let them have a network and connect with people in South Sudan. We have a number of women groups in South Sudan. We have Ministry of Gender. We have women association that will connect with them, and they will be able to channel their support. But also we are saying let them have a strategy to mobilize resources that will support our people back there.
For 27-year-old Jago Carlo, who lives in Fairfax, Virginia, efforts must be directed towards teaching girls in South Sudan basic literacy and math skills in order to build a strong foundation for the future.
I think girls back home definitely need, basic arithmetic, reading, writing, how to solve equations on their own. Also how to think independently and critically on their own, as well as work well as a team together.
Carlos says South Sudanese women in the diaspora can help women and girls back home by practicing effective communications, which allow them to connect, collaborate, and voice issues of concern.
I guess how they can help is just by encouraging that, in the sense of helping them communicate well. I mean, sometimes things get lost in arguments and how people feel about certain things, but if you can get past that, to effectively communicate is just the key.
Maryland resident Amlaset Kidani Wilby, who is a business strategy coach and member of the Eritrean diaspora, says she learned about the weekend event during the Eritrean community celebration earlier this month and wanted to support South Sudanese.
I think this is a great season and time for the African diaspora women to collaborate and to trade strategies. That was one of the emphasis that I wanted to speak on today is to make sure that some of the things we have not thought of in the Eritrean women's community, that we can get it from the Sudanese women and the South Sudanese women. And then what we're using, I think we have a lot of progressive things that we do for Eritrean women that they can use.
Wilby says South Sudanese in the DMV area can also benefit from collaborating with other African diaspora communities.
They have a great opportunity to involve all of the South Sudanese DMV population. And they can expand their community beyond, like, sectors. One of the things that we were very good at in the 80s and 90s was bringing the entire Eritrean community, despite differences, religion, politics, tribalism, to get past that, to pull each other. So maybe reaching out to other women, the other southern South Sudanese women in different parts of the DMV, and invite them to their event and then find a commonality that they can make a theme and collaborate on and work together.
Besides South Sudanese living in the area, the weekend event was also attended by diplomats from the South Sudanese Embassy in D.C. in the U.S. State Department. For VOA News, I'm Nabil Biagio in Washington.
From Washington, we move to Sudan, where signatories of a political deal in Sudan say a transitional civilian government is expected to be named in April. Both civilian and military officials agreed Wednesday to expedite restoration of civilian rule in Sudan, where the military has ruled since a 2021 military takeover. But some groups are against the framework agreement, and many Sudanese are skeptical that the military will ever give up power. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
Signatories to the December 2022 political framework agreement met on Wednesday to discuss progress toward restoring a civilian-led government in Sudan. Speaking to the press shortly after the meeting, Khalid Omar Youssef, the official spokesperson of the civilian coalition that signed the agreement, says the meeting focused on expediting the process of drafting a new constitutional document. The document, he said, will be the basis to govern the upcoming transition in Sudan. He says participants also resolved to form a technical team that consists of representatives of the civilian coalition and military forces and other experts. The body will be tasked with reviewing the agreement and drafting the constitution. He said the meeting discussed the general progress on the political process and resolved a number of issues, including discussion on the remaining two complex matters, the transitional justice and the military and security reforms. He said those two issues are to be discussed in the ongoing political conference that should end before the holy month of Ramadan. Ramadan begins March 23rd. Youssef says once discussions on transitional justice and military and security reforms are finished, the technical committee will start drafting a final political agreement that will lead to the establishment of a new civilian government in early April. He said the Joint Technical and Coordinated Committee that comprises the signatories to the agreement and the trilateral mechanism is expected to urgently draft a new time frame for the discussion of the remaining issues before signing of the final political agreement as soon as possible. Some signatories to the December 2022 political agreement, which aimed at settling Sudan's internal conflict, refused to join the ongoing political process because they reject the framework and want to maintain the 2019 constitutional declaration made after the overthrow of longtime President Omar al-Bashir. Many Sudanese are skeptical the military will completely give up power regardless of any deals that are struck. Khartoum resident Sahar al-Juzuli says the October 2021 military coup negatively affected the revolution for democratic rule in Sudan and said supporters of democracy will not accept any agreement that does not serve justice. Speaking to VOA via a messaging application Friday, al-Juzuli says Sudanese people are now more aware of their rights and they will continue to speak up once they realize the framework agreement does not serve their interest. Our people have learned a lot, she said, and they became more aware of their political rights as citizens by participating in the revolution. The Sudanese people learned and understood the meaning of uprooting rights, she said. They became determined towards achieving the slogans of the revolution, freedom, peace, and justice. Michael Atit for VOA News, Khartoum.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The United States is deeply concerned by reports of a court order to investigate 9 Guatemalan journalists for obstruction of justice, declared State Department spokesperson Ned Price in a statement. These individuals include journalists from El Periodico and its president, José Rubén Zamora, who has been held in pretrial detention since his arrest in July 2022. It was the government's latest move against El Periodico, the newspaper known for investigative reporting on public officials and government corruption. In December, a judge ordered that Zamora stand trial on charges of money laundering, influence peddling, and blackmail. In a February hearing, a judge acting on a request by prosecutor Cynthia Monterroso of the Guatemalan Prosecutor's Office ordered an investigation into journalists and columnists of El Periodico newspaper as part of a new criminal case against Zamora. She alleged these reporters had obstructed justice by criticizing the prosecutor's office for its actions against Zamora and not telling the truth about the charges against him. Mario Recinos, president of the Guatemalan Association of Journalists, said we're seeing a deterioration in rights. The Constitution establishes that criticism of officials is not a crime, he said. It also protects freedom of the press and opinion. The Committee to Protect Journalists joined the call for an immediate halt to any investigation into the columnists and employees of El Periodico and any further prosecutions of its president, José Rubén Zamora. Carlos Martinez de la Serna, CPJ's program director in New York, said authorities' targeting of the publication's staff after Zamora's arrest on dubious financial charges is a clear attempt by the prosecutors to intimidate and harass an investigative outlet and journalists working tirelessly to expose corruption. Peaceful, prosperous, and inclusive societies depend on the free flow of information and ideas, including the freedom to seek, receive, and impart information both online and offline, said spokesperson Price. Criminalizing the work of journalists and civil society undermines democratic norms and respect for freedom of expression. Spokesperson Price urged the Guatemalan justice system to reject the criminalization of independent journalists and support independent journalism as one of the foundations of a secure and prosperous democratic society.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
And that's all we prepared for you on this Monday. We now leave you with the song Fadia Le Siasa by Emmanuel Kembe. I'm your host, John Tanza, on this live broadcast from Studio 14 here in Washington. Don't forget to visit www.voaafrica.com for all your favorite programs and news updates. If you miss this program, go to voanews.com/South Sudan. On behalf of our producer, Gwen Uten and Nabil Biagio, and our engineer, we wish you a good evening and thanks for taking time to be with us. Remember to join us again next week. Remember to join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. Anina al mazlumin ginadil ashan shunu deya ashan dam ni belet na Sudan jadi ashan dagani fi huria fi Sudan jadi lakin malu pinastanin gishakil ashan kursi ugurush Shan kursi ugurush tishufu malela figaba ubukura fi medina bijere legaba ubiri
mama is a killer.